talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, ghetto. You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Show some love for yourself, people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. When what you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Ghetto people,
what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that?
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah.
Talking to my people,
but you just don't see
what you're living
like
at.
Living
like you're living,
caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dreams,
yeah.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Talking to my people, yeah.
Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. When what you really want inside can only come from
with your life,
running like a rare disease,
running like a rare disease.
Yeah.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they call themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family.
This call is being recorded.
Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Good morning, family. I hope everything is well with you this morning. I hope that you had a great weekend. Hope you had the opportunity to do all the things that you wanted to do, needed to do, have to do, and more importantly, I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. And of course, if it wasn't, you had to do it anyway. You just did it. And that's how that goes. Okay? It is a beautiful Monday morning here in the ATL. A little overcast, but it just, you know, can't deal with the weather. So it is what it is. And now the weather is so erratic because of climate change or global warming, whatever you want to call it. You never know what it's going to, you never know what the weather's going to be like or what's going to happen. So you just have to deal with it. You're listening to African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you can't listen live, you can go to the archives. You can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and listen to previous programs. And, of course, if you want to join in on the conversation, you can always dial our call-in number, which is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And, of course, to listen, you download the free app, TuneIn. Tell your friends, download the free app, TuneIn. Put in the search for Time for an Awakening, not an, in, A-N, in Awakening, Time for an Awakening. And then once you put that in there, you get that. And then on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. Eastern Time, you can hear African Perspectives. On Wednesdays, Sister POC would revive from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday evenings. Thursday evenings, it's Us Lifting Us. ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, Us Lifting Us. Every Thursday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. with Brother DJ, Baba Kambizi, Baba Kakima, Sister Nanana, Sister Shay, Brother Thurman, Baba Thurman, all the good brothers and sisters that present Us Lifting Us every Thursday. On Fridays, Time for an Awakening, Friday evening, 8 p.m. with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, if it's 10 in the morning, it's SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Saturdays, Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. And then on Saturday afternoon, early evening, if we want to call it that, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., it's Black Reality Think Tank with our host, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank. And then on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive, once again with Sister POC, Revive. And then Sunday evening, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday. Those are some of the programs. There are more programs to come here on Time for an Awakening. And so I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to our guest today. Finally, our program is rolling. From all the problems we've had, I hope that we can become more consistent, because those computer problems I was experiencing, but that's how it happens. You know what I'm saying? It's not exact. You think it's exact, and of course, when you rely on the internet and also to some of the things that could happen, some of the sabotage, nefarious people doing stuff, so you never know. But hopefully we'll be able to broadcast every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and you can hear me, I can hear you, and of course, anyone who calls in, as a guest or just a call-in, can hear them as well. So that's what we're definitely going for. That's what we're definitely going for, brothers and sisters. So we hope that's what happens. On the program today, I have two guests. Brother Mickey Dean out of the Kansas City. Mickey Dean is one of the international chairs, community affairs chairs for the National Black United Front, dealing with international issues. And Baba Kwaku out of Lansing, Michigan. And we're going to talk about the problems of enslavement of our people coming in Africa and Libya and other parts of the world. And, of course, also we're going to touch on what happened down in Zimbabwe and the ousting of Robert Mugabe and that situation that's happening there. First, a little background. I'm going to read a piece from, one of my main sources. I always use a main source, and one of them is Atlanta Black Star. I'm always encouraging our brothers and sisters to go on AtlantaBlackStar.com and check out the narratives and video streams that it has, all of the current issues. Also, a few others that I use, The Root, and definitely BlackAgendaReport.com with Brother Glenn Ford, BlackAgendaReport.com. All good resources for good information that we need to check out periodically as you go online. The world outrage has more reports of Africans being sold into enslavement in Libya's surface. This is Brother David Love, who is one of the staff persons with Atlanta Black Star. And good one to the meat of the article here. All right, thank you. Stop playing around. You know what, man? I can't believe this. Now this thing won't move. Oh, you got to be kidding. I tell you, okay, here we go. Like I'm saying, like a lot of times, it's not exact. It's not exact. And sometimes it needs to be refreshed, or you need to... Okay, it's starting to echo a little bit better. And this is a new computer, too, brothers and sisters. This is ridiculous. But I know that I'm not alone in experiencing computer problems. It just happens. Let me try this, and then maybe see if this will work. And that's not working either. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to come out of, there we go. And then I'm going to come back in, because I want to read this, and I know I got my brothers holding and our guests holding, and continue to do that. I'm going to be right with you. Just want to read this particular piece to set the groundwork of what we're going to be talking about today. And I really appreciate Baba Kwaku and Baba Mickey Dean for lending. And I've been trying to get this together, as you know, if you've been listening. I've been trying to put this together for some time, and I really appreciate Brother Mickey Dean's patience, because I've been trying, like I say, trying to put this together for some time. And so I appreciate your patience, brothers and sisters, and okay, we're going to be dealing with this just in a moment here, as I had to refresh my research computer. I'm glad that my broadcasting computer is, you know, okay, now here we go. Okay, here we go, brothers and sisters. I appreciate the patience. And because I think this will set a good groundwork for what our discussions are going to be today. Once again, it's David Love, who's one of the contributors to Atlanta Black Star. And the title is World Outrage as More Reports of Africans Being Sold into Enslavement Surface. African people are auctioned off in Libya like chattel. The revelation that smugglers are buying and selling sub-Saharan migrants in open-air slave markets in North African country is a reminder that human trafficking is a reality and slavery is not over for African people. The world was introduced to a graphic images and a video courtesy of CNN of African refugees sold in an auction like goat, reportedly for as little as $400. The migrants have come to Libya from a number of countries, including Cameroon, Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal, Sudan, and Zambia, fleeing economic deprivation and war in their own countries for a little and for a better life. They pay smugglers to help them get to Libya and ultimately across the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. But they run into human traffickers and gangs who exploit them and subjugate them to kidnapping and forced labor, rape, beatings, torture, and death. When they arrive in Libya, the refugees are jammed into detention centers, crammed warehouses without light or air, described as hell and worse than jail, which, with its porous borders, I'm reading some off the internet, as you know, when you have sites like these, they always have these pop-ups, you know. They always have these damn pop-ups and commercials, and they bring sound out to them. And it becomes such a hassle. Such a hassle. Man, I tell you. Okay. They pay smugglers to help them get to Libya and ultimately across the Mediterranean Sea, but they run into human traffickers and gangs who exploit them and subjugate them, kidnapping, forced labor, rape, beatings, torture, and death. When they arrive in Libya, the refugees are jammed into detention centers, crammed warehouses without light or air, described as hell or worse than jail. With its porous borders and the breakdown in security and order, Libya is the only option for Africans to make their way to the Mediterranean and Europe, as Israel has blocked African migrants from further entry and has devised plans to deport and imprison 40,000 refugees currently in Israel. It is estimated that between 700,000 and 1 million migrants are in Libya. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of people have crossed the Sahara and the Mediterranean, and thousands have died during the perilous journey. Just this year, an estimated 2,400 African migrants have died in the Mediterranean Sea. The images and videos of the slave auctions have sparked outrage internationally, with celebrities speaking out on the social media. They have some quotes from some so-called celebrities and so forth. The outrage over modern-day Libyan slavery has expressed on the African continent and in Europe, including a rally at the Libyan embassy in Paris, where hundreds of protesters convened and French police fired tear gas to disperse the crowd. In London, where an anti-slavery march is planned, a petition to the British Parliament to put pressure on Libya to stop slavery has received hundreds of thousands of signatures. The African Union has weighed in on the crises as well. In a statement, Mansour Mahamat, chairperson of the African Union Commission, strongly condemns these despicable acts, which are at odds with the ideas of the founders of our organization and relevant African and international instruments, including the African Charter on Human and People's Rights. Mahamat also calls for an immediate end to human trafficking and to bring the offenders to justice, and urges the Libyan authorities to do everything in their power to improve the conditions of African migrants in their territories. In a meeting of 80 African Union and European Union heads of state in the Ivory Coast or Cote d'Ivoire, members agreed to expedite the process of repatriating migrants suffering as many as 42 camps throughout Libya. Nigerian President Bahara decried the fact that some Nigerians were being sold like goats for a few dollars in Libya and said that they would be returned home and rehabilitated. French President Macron said slave trading is a crime against humanity and said traffickers are deeply linked to terrorists across North Africa. To set the picture of these men being treated like cattle and to hear the auctioneers describe them as, quote, big, strong boys for farm work, would shock the conscience of us all, said U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley to the U.N. Security Council. There are a few greater violations of human rights and human dignity than this. Meanwhile, Trump accuses that CNN is fake news, has caused Libyan news media to try to cast doubt on the veracity of the network's reporting on Libya. The shocking images that emerged last week of African people being sold in Libya is a crime against humanity. The time for the international community is to act right now, said Representative Barbara Bass, Democrat from California, ranking member of the House Subcommittee on Africa, in a statement. The member of Congress introduced a resolution condemning slave auctions in Libya and calling on the international community to take action. If Libyans cannot end slave auctions, then the international community will require to step in immediately, she added. The circumstances in Libya are a consequence of the nation's emerging as a failed state. In 2011, the U.S. and allied troops toppled Muammar Gaddafi. Obama said that his worst mistake was intervening in Libya and failing to plan for the day after. Gaddafi's overthrow left Libya unstable. Although slavery has taken place in Libya for a number of years, and Gaddafi was an authoritarian leader, there was no slavery in Libya during Muammar Gaddafi's rule. Gaddafi was a supporter of Pan-African unity, and Libya had one of the highest standards of living in Africa, leading the continent in the Human Development Index, a ranking standard of living, social security, health care, other factors related to development. All of this is now a fleeting memory. Although the focus is on slavery in Libya, the practice is by no means limited to that nation. A recent report from international labor organizations, Walk Free Foundation, and IMO, the UN Migrant Agency, says more than 40. Boy, I'm telling you, I can see these pop-ups. 40 million around the world were victims of modern-day enslavement in the year 2016. This includes 25 million in forced labor, 15 million in forced marriages. Modern enslavement, majority are females, 71% are females, and children account for one of every four people enslaved. Modern slavery is a practice in every part of the world, but Africa has the highest rate of enslavement, with 7.6 victims for every 1,000 people. 7.6 victims for every 1,000 people, according to Global Slavery Index. An estimated 2.9 million people were enslaved in the Middle East and North Africa as of 2016. Migrant workers from sub-Saharan Africa and Asia continue to flock toward North Africa and the Middle East countries, despite their xenophobic attitudes toward foreign workers, because the work is steady, because the stigmatization of certain manual work considered suitable only for non-local people. Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Oman, Bahrain, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, you name it, have been cited for the need to do more to address their troubling low level of accountability addressing these problems. Sadly, 150 years after slavery was abolished in most countries, slavery remains in Libya, across North Africa and the Middle East, and throughout the world. And that's an unfortunate truth. That is an unfortunate truth. We're going to invite our guests. We have Brother Mickey Dean, and we have Brother Baba Kwaku. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you guys doing this morning?
Yeah, good.
Hotel.
Hotel.
Can you hear me?
Am I on, Hoshi?
Yes, you are. Yes,
Baba. Oh, okay. All right. Yep. Okay.
Brother, you got
Mickey,
me, brother?
I got you too, Brother Mickey. How you doing?
I'm doing good for a senior citizen.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Well, we're talking today about the enslavement of African people, and as you know, unfortunately, that has been a reality for us for the last hundreds of years, that we have been taken into captivity by one group or another. And I think one of the reasons why that has happened is because We have been fragmented with tribalism, some mysticism, and all kinds of stuff. And as a consequence, when that happens, just like some have argued that the enslavement process back in the day, particularly European process, because we were war amongst each other, and then after a group of Europeans was come to a cultural group or a nation, because I don't like to call them tribes, I don't like that word, but a nation, and say, I see you have these people in captured. I can take them, you know, off your hands, and I'll give you whatever it is that they were so-called trading, whether it was particularly guns, alcohol, stuff like that. And then, of course, our people making that trade didn't realize or know what we were selling our people into or giving our people over to, you know. I get a lot of feedback, brother, so if you can, yeah, that sounds good there. But I'd like to get your perspectives on what I just read, Brother Mickey, and then Brother Baba Kwaku. Brother Mickey, go ahead.
Well, Brother Oshie, you know, I've had a lot of conversations about with people regarding this whole Libya issue, and you may have noticed online there's this trend now to say pray for Libya. But I think more than anything, people need to understand some of the background that has caused this situation. Libya currently is totally dysfunctional. It's a dysfunctional state. And this current situation was really brought about by the invasion by President Obama along with Hillary Clinton back in 2011 that destabilized the country. And that sort of paves the way for a lot of the I hope I'm not causing that disturbance here. I don't know what that is.
No, I know Baba Kwaku, you're listening. I had to mute you. So, but go ahead, Brother Mickey, make your point.
Okay, let me suggest this. One of the books that I would encourage people to read, it's a book called Slouching Towards CERT, NATO's War on Libya and Africa. CERT is S-I-R-T-E. That was the Gaddafi stronghold in Libya. That's where he was from, and that's where that was really the base of his support. And that was one of the areas that was most devastated by the NATO bombing, and of course for particular reasons. But I think understanding some background about that invasion is important. And in his book, he lists several reasons why the United States invaded Libya. And of course, the first one was the increased access of U.S. corporations to massive Libyan expenditures on infrastructure development. And of course, now reconstruction, now that they pretty much destroyed the country. And they had been frequently locked out of investment in Libya when Gaddafi was in power. And so that was one reason to get him out. Another reason that he listed is that warding off any increased acquisition of Libyan oil control contracts by Chinese and Russian firms. Libya, of course, has a lot of oil there. And of course, that's one of the main reasons that the United States and the West is interested in Libya, is because of the oil. A third reason was ensuring that a friendly regime was in place that was not influenced by ideas of resource nationalism. Resource nationalism basically meaning that this is our oil for our use, for our purposes. And of course, the United States don't believe that resources in other countries should be for their use, but they should be at the dictates of the United States and other Western countries. And so Gaddafi was basically using the oil wealth there basically to build up his country and also to help other countries. A fourth reason was increasing the presence of Africa. Africa Command is all over Africa. And I think they have a presence in about 50 or 52 of the 55 or 56 countries in Africa. And of course, in spite of all of the reasons about fighting terrorism, humanitarian, et cetera, the United States military is in Africa because of all of the natural resources in Africa. And of course, they want access to that and they want control of that. Another reason that he listed was expanding U.S. hold on key geostrategic locations and resources that are strategically located. Another reading is promoting U.S. claims to be serious about freedom, democracy, and human rights. And, of course, that's always the United States rationale for invading countries to bring freedom, democracy, et cetera, at least their form of it. Another reason was politically stabilizing the North African region in a way that locked out opponents of the U.S. And, again, this has to do with geopolitical battles in Egypt, particularly now with China. China's growing influence. And then the other reason was getting other nations to be involved under the so-called coalition. One of the key things that Gaddafi was doing, and if you look at some of Gaddafi's speeches, he was frequently began to quote Nkrumah, Kwame Nkrumah, and Nkrumah's whole concept of a united Africa. And Gaddafi was trying to really reestablish the African Union, make it something more than just a puppet for the West. He was beginning to build a base among some of the Black African nations. Now, Libya is known as an Arab state, but Gaddafi was taking Libya more towards a pan-Africanist orientation. That upset a lot of people, in addition to Western countries that saw this threat of African unity, but also some of the Arab population inside Libya that felt that Gaddafi was getting too close to the African countries. There were a lot of African migrants, as you mentioned, that were beginning to work in Africa. And there was this underlying resentment towards African people among some of the Arab Libyans that's been there for some time. And as Gaddafi moved closer to Black Africa, that really upset a lot of the Arabs there. And, you know, there was some tension beginning to develop between Arabs and Africans, Black Africans in Libya. And, of course, with the invasion and with the whole just dysfunctional government, now you've got some of these groups that are in power in different parts of the country, these Arab groups, that are really now attacking Africans with a vengeance. This was really happening, you know, back during the war, back during the invasion. And there were stories about a lot of Africans getting killed by Arabs and Africans really having to hide out. And so what we see now is just manifestation of that type of hatred with this whole slavery thing. So I'm just saying all to say that this whole slavery issue does have some background you know, with the tension between Arab Libyans and African Libyans, and it's gone back a ways. It was one of the things that Gaddafi really tried to, you know, put an end to. But at the same time, as he was, you know, maneuvering towards Black Africa, there was a lot of resentment. And I think that a lot of this slavery that we see is sort of a result of that.
I agree. And I had some research on that as well, Brother Mickey. Baba Kwaku. Let me get you up here. Baba Kwaku, how you doing this afternoon? This
morning? I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
Good.
Yeah, I agree with everything that Brother Dean is saying, and I look at it from where is it that we are as African Americans can try to help to mitigate the situation. You know, we can always protest, you know, with our various organizations putting out statements. But looking at trying to develop some type of plan, like perhaps with dealing with WADU, which always generally comes out with a take on all these worldly situations. And in fact, I think there was going to be a meeting either last week or next week in terms of a direction that we in the diaspora could take. But again, I think the point made that when things are in chaos, they move in, and it's just kind of what are we going to do to, you know, to mitigate the situation? You know, maybe start doing like what we did with the South Africa when we went and looked at the issue of genocide and pulling together maybe some type of a mission or someone to go to push our involvement in trying to end this situation, because there is this worldwide effort in trying to eliminate slavery, you know, and trafficking.
Well, you know, what's unfortunate is that we have been experiencing this problem for a very long time. The enslavement of African people did not stop in 1865. Here in this country or anywhere else, unfortunately, around the world, particularly in Northern Africa, where, I don't know, barbers or Arabs, of course, began to sweep. And then, of course, the religion of Islam being developed in 625, and Arabs began to sweep across Northern Africa. So today, the countries of Algeria, Mauritania, Libya, and so forth are Arab countries, and they treat African people terribly. Morocco, you name it. In fact, there is physical enslavement in Mauritania. It has been documented, you know.
Yes, for quite a while.
Yeah. And so what we're talking about today, dear brothers and sisters, and you can join this conversation, you can give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832 to join this conversation. My guest is Brother Mickey Dean, who is the chairperson of international affairs for the National Black United Front, and one of our other members, Baba Kwaku, out of Lansing, Michigan, and we're talking about the enslavement of African people that continues to this day. You know, what the article I read and what Mickey was saying as well is the fact that the Arab countries have become exactly very rich because of oil. And many of the people, they don't want to do manual labor. They don't want to even hire, because they're all so, you know, affluent now. So they hire, a lot of people they hire come from the Philippines, you know. But even the Africans who go into Qatar, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Abu Dhabi or Dubai, whatever, they go because they know there is work there. There's steady work there. And even though some of them are treated not as migrant workers, some of them are treated as slaves. And in fact, what was not mentioned in the article that I read, there are in Libya, in the selling of our people, some of them have become neutered. They have neutered them to sell them to particular families who may have, you know, women in there, and so they want the enslaved labor, but they don't want the problem of this person trying to mate with the women. So they're buying, they're neutering men and buying them as well. Well, we have a caller, 602. Go ahead. Caller.
Yes, Brother Oshie. Hey, Brother Marcus.
Brother Marcus, how you doing, dear brother?
I'm doing all right, and good morning to your guests also, brothers.
Good morning, brother.
You know, as you said, Brother Oshie, you know, this Arab, you know, is the first one who really talked to European about that slavery, that Arab, you know, and he's a thorn in our side. But, you know, South Africa and Nigeria militarily could deal with Libya, you know. Combined, those two countries alone could deal with Libya. And that's what it's going to have to take. We're going to have to put some pain on these people, man. Because that's the only thing these people understand. It's pain.
Well, you know,
it ain't about love. It's about, look, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to put it on you. And that's where it's got to get down to. You know, this talking and, oh, let's join hands and sing Kumbaya, it ain't going to work, you know? So, you know, look, we are saying Africa for the African, those at home and those abroad.
I say.
And as I say, the African has no friend, even the Chinese that are there. We got to watch them too.
Oh, yeah.
You see, because they said two of the largest military bases that the U.S. have, that U.S. and China have, is in Djibouti.
Yeah.
They're over there and in the Horn of Africa. So look, we got to drive all these people out of Africa. Everybody got to get out of here. You know, it may happen tomorrow. Once we get the African people aroused, that's who we got to get. It ain't them leaders, it's the people we got to arouse. You know, but I see we're gonna win this battle. In spite of how dismal it look, we're going to win this struggle.
I say, I agree.
Keep on listening, brothers. Thank you so much for this program.
Thank you, Brother Marcus. And what he talks about, what Brother Marcus talks about, and I'll let you get in, Baba, Brother Mickey and Baba, but what he's talking about is the fact that Africans should solve this problem. In fact, Africans should not have their people leaving to go even to Europe so they can work. But we have to understand the devastation that has happened to Africa and who is responsible for it. It is colonialism. It is Europeans. Europe is rich because of its rape of Africa. And so even though Cameroon asked that they, and Nigeria asked, we want our people back. If you're Nigerian and you've left Africa, I mean, you left Nigeria to go to Libya so you could cross the Mediterranean Sea. And I just mentioned the fact that there have been already last year alone, I don't know how many have died this year, but last year alone, almost 2,500 of our people died trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea and washing up on the shores of whatever, you know. So I know that Cameroon said that they would send a contingency to Libya, even if it means war, you know, but... And Brother Marcus just mentioned that the fact that if South Africa and Nigeria got together, they could go give them cats a beat down. But the bottom line is that would cause a more even deeper conflict. But the other issue is the state of Libya itself. Brother Mickey mentioned the fact that what Muammar Gaddafi had done in Libya, the fact that he was a benevolent. He's what I like to call a benevolent dictator. He is somebody who used the oil wealth of the country to benefit its people. There was no problems, no issues in Libya prior to him talking about, I'm going to help unify Africa. I'm going to be the president of the African Union. We need a United States of Africa, and we're going to have a currency presenting the gold dinar. And it's saying that if you wanted to buy goods and services, you would have to use this coin. Well, at that particular moment, the West got together and the international bankers says, we have to get rid of him. And if you were not an aware person, then you were looking at news reports consistently talking about the crimes that Muammar Gaddafi was inflicting upon his people. You would see riots in the streets and so forth. This was the justification for the EU and the United States under Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And I've always said, and I will continue to say, that the blood of Muammar Gaddafi is on the hands of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. So
you're absolutely right, bro.
Go ahead, Mickey.
Well, I just wanted to go back to a couple of things. One is, Brother Marcus talked about Africa for Africans, and I think that, of course, we know the story of the Berlin Conference back in 1886 or 88, I believe it was, where the European powers divided Africa and determined which European nation was going to colonize which area. And I went back last year and reread, and I really would encourage people to do this, reread Kwame Nkrumah's book, Africa Must Unite. Because in this book, he laid out the rationale for a United States of Africa. And this was during the whole decolonization period, which we know led into a lot of neocolonialism as opposed to liberation. But people like Nkrumah and Patrice Lumumba, they were basically talking about unifying Africa under African rule, driving out the colonialists, and using Africa's resources for Africa. That's the reason that Nkrumah was deposed. That's the reason that the CIA had Lumumba murdered. The same thing with Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso. The same thing with Mugabe. All of these people were students of Nkrumah and students of this whole notion that Africa had to unite and use its resources for itself. So, and as you mentioned, and you laid it out very well, one, the status of living conditions in Libya, I mean, it had one of the highest living standards in the world. I visited Libya twice back in the early 90s. Of course, this was back when you weren't supposed to be doing that. But the infrastructure there was very, very sound at the time. And you can see that economically, Libya was very stable. The education of people, I think about 90%+ of the people were literate. And all of the other things that you mentioned. But when Gaddafi started talking about moving towards Pan-Africanism, talked about the currency thing that you just mentioned, using the gold in our, the West said, this cannot happen, And remember, several years ago, Gaddafi was once a pariah, but he entered into an agreement, and I can't remember who was president at that time because they were concerned about his developing a nuclear weapons program. He gave that up. And so for a while, he was on pretty decent terms with some of the Western governments until this whole move towards Pan-Africanism took place and this whole thing about, using a different currency. And at that point, according to the West, the United States, he had to go. And that's exactly what they did. Anytime there's a move towards unifying Africa away from the West, I mean the Europe, the United States, the Chinese, all of them, as Brother Marcus said, they all need to go. And Africa for Africans, I'm a big proponent of that. But I think this whole notion of a united Africa, if that could come about, that will go a long way in solving Africa's problem. Africa united under leadership like people like, Nkrumah or Thomas Sankara or Patrice Lumumba or Mugabe, et cetera. And that's the direction that it needs to go in.
And what's unfortunate is we don't see that happening. The old lion, Robert Mugabe, was talking about it. He wanted to do it, but of course he had internal conflicts within Zimbabwe, and now he has been removed. We're going to talk about that in the second half of the program after the break, but there is nobody on the continent talking about that. Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop also mentioned a federated African state. And that's why, and I believe that all those brothers or sisters who mentioned the unification of Africa, Because the boundaries you see on a political map are not drawn by Africans. Those boundaries that you see on a political map were drawn probably at the Berlin Conference of 1884-85 when Europeans carved up Africa.
When those boundaries, you're right, that's exactly when those boundaries were made.
And carving up Africa like it was a cake, you know, with the country of Belgium taking a huge chunk right in the middle of the Congo and taking out all the resources. It is alleged or believed that King Leopold of Belgium probably killed about 10 million of our people. We know he maimed a lot of them, cutting off arms and legs and so forth for those who did not bring in a quota or bring in the right amount of wood, rubber, or whatever resources that they were going for at the time. So you can see the devastation on the African continent by those who are outside of Africa. And so on. And to me, Baba Mickey and Baba Kweku, Africa and Africans on the continent and throughout the diaspora have every right to declare ourselves self-sufficient and independent and self-determining. We have every right to do this. We don't have to ask nobody for permission. We don't even have to go to no damn UN. We don't have to go nowhere. Only thing we have to do is change our minds as how we think about ourselves and how we think about the continent and think about African people. Imagine if we began to think in that direction, we would change this whole dynamic. Brother Baba Kweku, what do you have to say about that?
I agree, yes, 100%. And my focus is, what are we going to do here as the Africans? I mean, there are people on the continent who are definitely trying to help with this situation and organize. And us combining our efforts with them is important. And we need to be Johnny on the spot in challenging our United States and their participation in this. We need to be working with our Congressional Black Caucus, pushing our organization, pulling together meetings and groups to petition, you know, to do the same things that we've been used to in terms of from the diaspora promoting, you know, African unity, you know?
I think that, Baba, I definitely agree with you. I think the problem, of course, is that many of our people don't consider themselves African. In 2 years, it'll be 400 years, 1619, 2019, that we have been in this country, supposedly. And in that 400 years, we really need to take an assessment of our situation, of where we are as a people. Because of what has happened to us, a lot of us don't consider ourselves African. We want to be black. We don't want to be African. Because the image of Africa is so distorted and the image of Africa is looked at with such disdain, you know, all them poor Africans, flies on their face. And we don't understand the dynamics of how that whole thing happened. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk further about the possibilities of Africa uniting. We'll talk about also, too, once again, the enslavement of African people on the continent. And, of course, the coup d'etat that happened in Zimbabwe and what it means for African people. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Brothers, let's listen to some Mandrill. Hold your ears. We'll be right back.
I know you do.
Brothers and sisters, that was Mandrill, Finch Walker, the early 70s, I think like 71, 72. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on Wednesday, Sister Revive with POC. Sister POC with Revive every Wednesday, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, ULU, every Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Fridays, Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, 8 p.m. until. And then on Saturdays, SST, that's Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. And then on Saturday afternoons, and it's going to start up hopefully this Saturday, is Dr. William Rogers with Black Reality Think Tank, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturdays. On Sunday, Revive, again, is going to be on at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday with Sister PLC. And then on Sunday evening, it's time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. So, we're going to get back to our guests, Brother Kwaku. Brother Kwaku, how you doing?
Can you hear me, Brother Ocean?
I sure can.
Okay. Listen, I was wanted to comment on with you the term what you mentioned about people not wanting to be African. One of the things that I always thought that happened was the greatest thing 20th century was the fact that we began to call ourselves African American. And even though it has that American term, I think people, maybe some begrudgingly, have accepted the idea of Africa and our linkages with it. And I think that might be something we can build upon in terms of making a thrust toward looking at what we're doing as an African perspective and concentrating on Libya and or Zimbabwe. So, and another book that a guy has written, a book called Uwindi, he looks at the, and Uwindi is not a Swahili word, but Bantu word that means cooperation, and that we already have that strength. I always have said that people used to say that black people didn't stick together. I said, well, if we hadn't stuck together, we wouldn't even be here. And I think we need to approach, I think, where we go from our strengths and how can we pull those strengths together. You know, not only physically, but mentally, and try to spread a collectiveness of that African, if you even do it for Africa. Because I think our role is incredibly important in what in Africa, even more so than many of us think. So I think we just need to try to orient our thinking more toward the utilization of our strength.
Well, I agree with you, dear brother, but the problem, of course, is that, and I agree with you with the naming of ourselves as Africans, although I don't like African-American. I choose to use Africa as the noun. That's why we're not black. I always say we're not black like they're not white. We're not black. We're Africans. Black is a color. Africa is a noun. When you describe a people, that's like Dr. Clark said, when you talk about a people, you should conjure up land, history, and culture. We're Africans. That's the noun. A noun describes a person, place, or thing. There's a word that goes in front of the noun. There's a word that goes in front of the noun that describes what kind of noun it is. That's an adjective, you know. And so we are American Africans. If we were Jamaican, we'd be Jamaican Africans. If we were in London, we'd be British Africans. Y'all get the picture? Even on a continent, they are Africans. But if you were Nigerian, you were Nigerian African or Ghanaian African or Namibian African. We're Africans. And if we can embrace the whole idea of us being African as one, that's the most revolutionary thing that we can do at this very moment. Is declare that we are an African people. The most revolutionary thing we can do, it don't take anything but the changing of our minds. And one may argue that's probably the hardest thing to do, particularly because of how this country, America, imposes itself so deeply on us. When Brother Mickey, when you talked about a strategy on the continent, And the fact that AFRICOM is on now every place in Africa, because the only place it wasn't was in Zimbabwe. And now that Zimbabwe has been taken over by a man who wants to pay the Caucasians for the land that they stole from us initially. And then not only that, he said that he wants to be a part of the British Commonwealth again. I mean, that one really floored me, you know. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's incredible, bro. But let me just say one quick thing about the point you mentioned, which is a very good point about not us not wanting to be African. But also keep in mind that that's just not something that's an infliction here in this country. You know, I've had a chance to visit the continent about six times now, and the effect of colonization is deeply embedded in the psyche of many Africans there. I mean, I remember my first trip to Senegal, and I saw these vehicles going down the street with pictures of white Jesus on them, you know, and so that whole mindset is also on the continent. So there has to be a reawakening on the continent also, and I mean, we need the young leaders like Steve Biko and the nationalist young sisters and brothers like that, because remember, he was another brother that was taken out by the government in Azania. So that mindset is something that is a problem also on the continent, and there has to be an African mind reawakening on the continent also. You know, you've got these skin lighteners, and you've got these hair straighteners, and I mean, so there's a lot of work to be done with African people all over the world.
And it is.
So that was the point I wanted to make.
And the fact of the matter is that African people have been so physically, mentally, and emotionally demoralized because of the imposition of European culture and the dominance of European culture. That, just like you said, I mean, I've talked about this on my program many times about the self-hatred that we have for ourselves, you know, the skin bleaching. And in fact, if I had invested in any kind of skin bleaching or whiteners about 10 years ago, I'd be a multimillionaire today. But that's sad, you know, but that's true, you know, but that's so sad, you know. But the fact of the matter is, I believe there is a group of brothers and sisters on the continent in various countries on the continent that believe in African redemption, African self-determination, and a idea of one Africa. I believe there's men and women throughout the diaspora who believe the same thing and want to return home, who want to go back to Africa. Not that they really know exactly where they came from, whether it's on the west coast of Africa, the central part, southern part, or the eastern part of Africa. All they do know is that Africa has all of the world's, this is Dr. Clark's quote again, Africa has all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. And that is the situation that we're dealing with. Africa is not poor. Africa is rich. It is rich with mineral resources. All we have to do, dear brothers and sisters, is release the vice grip that this cracker has on our minds and step outside of the imposed boundaries that they have put us in. Not that we deal with the cracker, because there's nothing that we can do to change the minds of Europeans. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior, and ain't a damn thing that we can do or say, because there's bona fide proof that they're not. Consistently, but they ignore it. They dismiss it because they have to believe. And one of the things that it is possible from that psyche that they have is just the same thing that Francis Cress Welsing is saying, is that when they came out of being land poor, resource poor, and people poor, and then began to venture out and seeing this, that, and the other, and then began their explorations of going around the world, taking everybody's stuff in the name of Spain, Portugal, France, England, Germany, you name it. They were having intimate relationships, rape, of the indigenous people, and saw that they did not look like them, which caused them to have an innate fear of genetic annihilation. And so therefore, the Caucasians, Europeans who said we have warred amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on everybody outside of us, and we're going to subdue them, and we're going to subjugate them, everybody outside of us. And that mentality is still visible to this day.
And you're right, Brother Oshie. There is, I mean, all of these folks trying to change white folks' mind are just, I mean, that's got to be the most absolute waste of time that there can be. I mean, you're not changing their minds. You're not changing their psyche. I mean, they will continue to hate us. I don't even divide them between these liberals and conservatives. I mean, they all white supremacists.
For exactly. Concerned.
They all basically looking to extend white control and white domination throughout the world. That's the one thing that they agree on. Tactically, they may disagree on how to do it sometimes, but there's no doubt that they all agree on the need for white domination of the world, and that's their mission. So trying to change these folks' minds is absolute waste.
No, it really is. Baba Kwaku, you got to add something to that?
Yeah, just kind of still, as we maybe still focus more on what we do, like I still think we know they are that way. It's just like Malcolm said, anything this side of Canada is south. So either they stab you in the back or they go frontward, like Brother Mickey said, that their intent is still the same. So if we make our intent the same as with the whole Pan-African world, now I just look at, like I said, I look at groups like WADU, which is actively trying to deal with this situation. They need more of our help to not only help to organize their strategies, but also to be a part of their thrust in terms of trying to, you know, come up with, well, I think they do have an overall plan, and maybe we need to look at it and see how we can interact as an organization or as individuals. We may need to start pulling our resources together to invest in African development, which is happening.
Baba, you know, Baba Kwaku, tell our listening audience who WADU is, although I'm familiar with WADU. In fact, I've worked with WADU here. I work with WADU here in Atlanta. But tell our listening audience who WADU is.
The World African Diaspora, the Union, which is the sixth region of the African Union. And so we have a voice, or WADU, I tend to... I'm just working to get most of the information, but I'd like to become much more involved in helping to organize a strategic move to begin to keep African resources, you know, to work with keeping African resources within their hands. And because I think tentatively there is that recognition that we are a part of the African team, so we're using that to try to leverage, you know, some of our ideas, thoughts, and resources in that effort. And so that's kind of where, and we know the colonialism and neo-colonialism and what has happened. And I think we are developing some strategies to counteract this. I think even looking at China coming in, you know, we're looking at it from that Cold War aspect of, you know, Africans are leveraging who will do the best for the China or the West. How do we look at that as folks of Africans in the diaspora, especially in America? How do we look at those issues, maybe spread those issues, see what our Congressional Black Caucus is doing? And right now, I think they're focused on a lot more domestic issues, but let's we push them, you know, Mailfoot and some of the others to look at some of the directions that we would like to see it go, especially, you know, and then really assess Libya in terms of its impact still on the African Union or lack of an impact. Where would we like to strategically see it, you know, just kind of move in that direction?
Well, you know, I haven't heard anything coming out of the Congressional Black Caucus or other brothers or sisters who are in politics, whether it was a congressperson, a senator, or whatever. You know, I've heard some organizations state what the problems are in terms of what's going on in Northern Africa and what's going on in Africa, but I haven't heard anything coming out of the politicians, and I don't expect to. You know, I don't expect
one thing, Brother Oshie, you keep in mind about the Congressional Black Caucus. Remember now, we're talking about a black president that you know, dropped bombs on Africa, you know, not only in Libya, but also in Somalia. I hear what you're saying, Brother Kwaku, about the Congressional Black Caucus, but I expect absolutely nothing from them when it comes to the liberation of Africa. I mean, these people are politicians. They're pretty much bought and paid for it like other politicians. I don't think that, this is my opinion, and knowing the history of some of the black congressional delegation, I just don't see them. You know, maybe there are some tactical things they can do in Congress, get this passed or that passed, but as far as them playing a major role in what I think we're trying to accomplish, liberating Africa, I don't see much help coming from that.
No, I don't either. In fact, the liberation of Africa is going to truly be a grassroots movement, because those who have money, those who have wherewithal, those who have position and all kinds of things in that nature, they don't want to disturb or upset their position. Because you got to understand, we live in a world dominated by capitalism. And capitalism, being the predatory system that it is about, it speaks to the will of individualism. And see, in fact, there's a saying, Brother Baba Kwaku and Brother Mickey, that individualism is a European or European Caucasian desire. I think, therefore I am. That rugged individualism, I did it on my own, and so forth and so on. But collectivism is an African need, an African imperative. It is a must. And so collectively, if those of like-mindedness who have Africa in their hearts and in their minds could come together on the continent and throughout the diaspora and formulate a committee or a delegation of African people saying to African countries, we're coming in, no longer will the leadership fragment and dominate the people and rape the people and rape the country. No longer will those who come from outside, be it Chinese, whoever else, will come in and dictate and dominate Africa. It is a new day. It is a new time for the Renaissance for African people. And then Africans throughout the, in fact, Malcolm said it best, Malik Shabazz said it best. It says, Africans will never be respected until Africa is under the control of Africans. That is a bottom line. As you can see, we are dogged out everywhere on this damn planet. In fact, when you mention China, how the Chinese operate, the Chinese will come in and they'll say, I'll build this project, but they only use Chinese workers, and many of the workers are prisoners. They don't use any local or indigenous workers on these projects. I witnessed it myself in the Bahamas. In the Bahamas, in Nassau, they're building a huge resort on what looks like something out of Vegas. And what was interesting, when I was there for the Black Firefighters Convention, they were on strike because the Chinese workers, not the laborers, but those who are in middle management and so forth, were at odds with China about their pay, because the manual workers are Chinese prisoners taken out of the prison camps or whatever in China and put on that boat and sailed to wherever to do the work. But they don't use any local labor in these particular projects.
But Oshia, we witnessed the same thing. We were in Tanzania last year, and of course the Chinese has a presence in Tanzania. And in Arusha, we saw I know at least one project that the Chinese were building, and our host there, brother Pete O'Neill and Sister Charlotte, they talked about the fact that we saw Chinese people out there working. And now in many places in Africa, there's a conflict between the African people and the Chinese, because the Chinese are bringing in their own people, you know, to do this work. So the African people are just getting doubly exploited. And of course, but the African governments, these neo-colonist governments, are very compliant with the, you know, the Chinese, just like they were with the United States and Russia, et cetera. And so there's really going to have to be some revolutionary movements inside the continent against some of these backward governments that are propped up by the United States military, by AFRICOM, and now by the Chinese. Because I understand now that the Chinese are talking about building a military base. I can't remember exactly where it is, but somewhere on the continent now they're talking about building a military base. And so we know what their intentions are.
And in fact, in Uganda, there are Chinese marrying African women, marrying Ugandan women, because by marrying an Ugandan woman, he is staking his claim to the land. He is staking his claim to the territory right there in Uganda and the mineral wealth that is right there. Brothers and sisters, you know, even though we're talking about this and we're talking about what is happening in Libya at this time, and it hasn't stopped, we're also talking about the enslavement of African people throughout Northern Africa and Mauritania and other parts of the world. We're talking about the disrespect that African people are shown in various parts of the world, in China, Europe, here in this country, wherever. We're talking about the negative feelings that European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege, how it impacts us, how we make it, how it makes us feel about ourselves, the way we look, makes us, how it instills in us a self-hatred, not just for our personal selves, but for each other. We are at a serious crossroads, dear brothers and sisters, and I'm hoping that there is a cadre of leadership outside of the BS politics that we experience that understands and has a vision for African people, and that is the freedom on the continent and the feeling that African people, wherever we are, just like when the European Jews took Palestine, which, by the way, they have no right to. The European Jews are not genetically the Hebrews of ancient times. The European Jews are the Ashkenazi. They are the late converts to Judaism about 1,000 years ago. These are Europeans. They're Caucasians, but they dominate and they control Judaism. And they put the pressure on ignorant Trump's butt to say, I proclaim Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And you can see Benjamin Netanyahu smiling and grinning right behind him when he made the announcement, knowing that this was going to inflame Arabs and inflame other people around the world. But that's the arrogance of Caucasians today. And I'm saying to us, this is really problematic for us because our future is not certain. Here in this country, brothers and sisters, our numbers are dwindling. Our population is dwindling. We used to be 17% of this nation's population. We're under 13% because of imprisonment, mass incarceration, homosexuality, brothers not wanting to deal with sisters, dealing with Caucasians and anybody else. A substance abuse.
Well, see, you're absolutely right about that. And this whole thing with Israel, I mean, that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah,
of course. But,
yes, it is.
But all of our presidents, including your brother, Obama, they've all, you know, kowtowed to the Zionists in Israel. Even though there was some conflict between, you know, Obama and Netanyahu, but they still offered what is it, $10 billion or something like that. But before we get away, I think I was the one to kind of change the subject, but you had mentioned something about Zimbabwe, and I wanted to just touch on that bit before we got off the air.
Sure. So,
you know, if that's okay.
No, yeah, definitely. I want to talk about Zimbabwe. I want to talk about what happened there. You know, I want to talk about what's going on there now. You know, of course, the old lion, how he ruled Zimbabwe. And that's a problem, too, dear brothers and sisters, with leadership. The main thing about leadership should be is to have a succession plan, to groom younger people, to take the mantle and take the country, the organization, whatever, to another level. But there are some of us, once we have it, we don't want to give it up. And of course, we put cronies or relatives or those who would be yes persons in positions, and we continue to operate in a failed manner, you know. But yes, Brother Mickey, go ahead and talk about that, and then Baba Kwaku, I'm going to get you in, okay? Go ahead, Brother Mickey.
Well, I just think that we have to take a balanced view of Brother Mugabe in the history of Zimbabwe, and not to go through all of that, but we know that it was, you know, during the Berlin Conference, it was colonized by the British, and of course Cecil Rhodes played a major role in colonizing Southern Africa. And of course, you know, prior to Zimbabwe, the country was called Rhodesia, and then there was the liberation movement that took place, and it was led by ZANU, which was Mugabe's organization, and ZAPU, which was Joshua Nkomo's organization. And they were in and out over time, but the liberation movements did prevail in 1978, 1980, that period. And it was at that point that Mugabe was really then, first of all, he was trying to work with the British. But and you know, Zimbabwe was called the breadbasket of Africa at that time because of its mineral wealth and also because of its agriculture wealth. But at the time that Mugabe had said, you know, enough is enough, it's time now to return our land to our people, that's when the West, Britain, the United States took notice. And when he began to just take land from the white farmers without compensation, which is the way it should have been because we didn't owe them nothing. I mean, they stole what they had. And then that's when you started having the economic sanctions and the economic boycotts, et cetera. And then there were some natural issues there, the droughts and so forth, that really caused Zimbabwe's economy to go under. And of course, you had the name of the opposition now is escaping me, but the one that was backed mainly by the West, there was money being poured into them to disrupt Zimbabwe. And like you said, that you know, there wasn't, to my understanding, and I'm really trying to understand more about what happened internally there, a group of young revolutionaries that were, you know, that were ready to take on the mantle of leadership and continue this revolutionary movement. And all of that basically ended up causing economic collapse in Zimbabwe, and that, you know, just kind of prepared the ground for Mugabe to be removed. And you're right, man. I mean, this the new leadership talking about joining what's the union you mentioned?
The British Commonwealth, right? They're talking about rejoining
the Commonwealth.
The British Commonwealth.
Repaying these the white farmers for the land that they stole. So I mean, we see where this is headed. That's another unfortunate situation on the continent. But it just shows what happened when, you know, this whole thing of an opposition, because the United States always wanted to cry what they call one party states. There's no opposition. This is what they call democracy. One of the reasons that the United States has not been able to overthrow Cuba is because Cuba basically has not allowed an opposition. In other words, opposition to them is somebody, a group that's opposed to the revolution. Because had they had an opposition group in Cuba, you can be sure that group would have been funded by the United States, by the CIA, whoever, and they would have caused so much internal confusion in Cuba. So we shouldn't be, you know, get buy into this whole thing about you got to have a two-party system, you got to have opposition, especially if the opposition is opposed to the revolution. They need to be crushed. I don't care if there is just one leading group. It's just that that leading group inside of that group has to be democratic. It has to allow for discussions and debate and so forth. But I have no problem with crushing opposition groups that basically are trying to undermine the revolution, because that's exactly what they're going to do, and that's what the Western countries latch on to when they want to cause confusion and regime change in these countries. So I just think we have to take a balanced view of what happened in Zimbabwe and a balanced view of Mugabe. And I just want to read, before I turn it over to you, brothers, this one quote from Mugabe that I think says a lot about why he was attacked. He said, "Africa has no ambition to control the resources of Britain or any Western nation. We are entirely disinterested in their affairs. History shows that we have never expressed any hostilities against them. Instead, we have been victims of unprovoked aggressions and interference in our domestic affairs. Our only ambition is to totally control that which belongs to us, our God-given natural resources. This much is not open to negotiation." And that was the problem. He took that attitude, Africa for Africa. These are our natural resources. They're not yours. And we do as we please with them. And of course, when you take that attitude, obviously you're going to draw the ire of the West. And you've got to be able to then defend yourself.
And you're right. You have to defend that. When you take that kind of position, you have to defend that. Because idealistically, once again, Africa has all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Imagine then if African nations could come together, throw off the yoke of European colonization, all of the ignorance, all of the superstition, all of the tribalism, BS, and come together as an African, one Africa, eliminate all those superficial boundaries, all the pettiness, and then now, whatever you want from Africa, you pay fair market value for. None of this stuff, this radio program right now on these computers is because of Colton coming out of Africa, the flat screen,
right,
the TV, all of this. If it wasn't for that, you could not have this. But yet, that is a raw material. It's just like, Brother Mickey, I'm in Ghana. And I'm at a cocoa farm. Well, of course, they call it a plantation. I even hate the word plant. I don't want to use it. I'm at a cocoa farm. But yet, I realize all of the raw materials, because Africans don't produce nothing. We have the raw materials, but the raw materials leave out of Africa, particularly like cocoa. And they go into Europe for Swiss chocolate, Cadbury's, Nestle's, Hershey's. It's just like this. I'm in Ghana. I'm halfway in between. I'm in one Africa. A brother named Brother Benny, who changed his name, he had an African name, Nana Okofu. He died in Ghana a few years ago. But prior to that, the second time I came to Africa, the second time I came to Ghana, I'm looking out on the horizon at night, because he lived right on the ocean. He lived right on the ocean, and they built some chalets, right? Beautiful. He's halfway in between Cape Coast and Elmina dungeons. In fact, you could see Cape Coast dungeon from his place. But we're looking over the Atlantic, and on the horizon, I see some lights, and says, that's a fishing ship. But the fishing ship is not Ghanaian. The fishing ship is Japanese. The Japanese have, they don't have any fish around their islands, because they've outfished them. So here they had a contract with Ghana that everything is done on that ship. They get the ship, they clean them, package them, freeze the whole bottom line, done right there. They sell back to the Ghanaians, and they ship all of the other fish back to Japan for their people. You see? So my point being is that there has to come a time, dear brothers and sisters, where we can truly separate our minds from what this European has done to us and think outside of the box and come together
to manage the land and manage the people on the continent of Africa. There has to come a time. I know it's not soon, but it better be soon, because we don't have, you know, let me get Brother Baba Kwaku in here on this discussion. Baba Kwaku, go ahead. Baba Kwaku, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. Listen, one of the things that I was saying when we look at it, I'm here actually. I'm with the National Caucus, the Center for the Black Ages, and there's quite a few women here. And they were happy that I came here, even though I'm on a call, that they got a man there. So I'm looking at the different women there. One is a nationalist, one is a probably an integrationist, another is in the middle. They all adhere to the term African American. And the reason I was saying get in touch, I think we need a strategy. Back with the Republic of New Africa, we actually had a national plan and actually thought of ourselves as a nation, similar to the Nation of Islam. And we need people that will be able to negotiate with the nationalists, with the Pan-Africanists, with politicians to develop a plan. We need just to do it. That's why I say we don't leave any group out. If we're going to be collective, since we don't have a bunch of people who think like us, we're going to have to utilize those who don't think like us. So that reason I say, so I'm going to leave any group out in terms of negotiating our path forward. And that's where I think we need to essentially be. And we have to deal with the you got some group of people that's going to be dealing with the Chinese incursion, you know, the Japanese incursion. You know, we need a body that we have different pieces of the body, as long as we know what our goal and our plan is to deal and negotiate with the various groups. And that to me is a unified, because we need our tentacles in every aspect. Of African development, African American development, Caribbean development. You know, utilize what's happening in the Caribbean around the reparations movement, where we do have a unified CARICOM piece to be an example of how we can move or not move, but a way that we kind of got an organized approach to this. And even though we may not like to work with certain people, I think we're going to have to.
Well, I agree with you, Baba Kwaku, that we're going to have to come together to do that. In fact, we're going to be talking about reparations on our next program this Wednesday with Brother Akil, Brother Damani Akil, who had just attended a conference on reparations. You know, the bottom line is that we have a myriad of problems and issues that we must correct internally as African people. And the most important of that correction is our attitude, our minds, what we think, how we think, what we do, how we behave. We have to control that. We have to gain control of our minds. In fact, I end this program, ending every program that I've had in the last 3 years, with the words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor, the European, the Caucasian, the cracker. The most potent weapon in their hands is the minds of us, the oppressed. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because we sit on the resources that the world needs and wants. And we should be in control of that. Nobody should be in control of that but African people, for the benefit of African people. You know? So, I don't know, brothers and sisters. Go ahead, Mickey.
Well, I just want to, and I think, you know, one of the things that I appreciate about what Brother Kwaku has been saying is that he's been coming back to this whole need for us to organize. I mean, I think all of the things that we're saying make a lot of sense, but the question is, how do we really develop that on the ground? How do we develop a kind of an African international, you know, the kind of thing that Brother Malcolm was talking about, because there are some Pan-Africanists on the continent.
Yes.
That we may not hear about, but there are people organizing there. And somehow, you know, they've got to create community. We've got to be able to connect with them. But there's got to be some organizing. It's a difficult struggle given what we're up against, but it's certainly not impossible. And that organizing just has to spread, particularly throughout the diaspora, really, and develop some Pan-African unity around the world that can really seriously begin to move against, Western imperialism, to move against neocolonialism, and to wage a second liberation struggle in Africa that we thought might happen back in the 50s, you know, when Ghana became independent. And there was all of this, and you had Lumumba and Yeri and people, then you had the independence movement that was really beginning to spread throughout Africa. But Nkrumah, and also his book, Neocolonialism, The Last Days of Imperialism, I mean, he really analyzed what happened and how that whole movement was co-opted and became more of a neocolonialist kind of movement. But somehow there has to be, as Brother Kwaku was saying, that organization, that organizing to get done on the ground what we're talking about. Because we're talking about, what needs to happen. The question becomes, how do we get there? Yeah. And that's kind of, why I'm glad that we do keep an international presence in the National Black United Front. We do try to keep abreast of international issues, but we've got to see how we can as Brother Kwaku is saying, how can we engage ourselves in this whole struggle for a new African international?
And that's what we need to work on. All the energies need to be put into that direction. To hell with voting, to hell with congressional representation. The bottom line is we are at a serious crossroads. My guest last week was Dr. Rogers, whose program Black Reality Think Tank, along with Dr. Bridges, was on the program last Friday. And what Dr. Rogers said was that we are being eliminated. We are being killed. We are being exterminated. I saw a piece with Bill Gates talking about the vaccinations that they're doing in Africa. And what he said, because usually, if you think about it, vaccinations are supposed to help you fight off whatever so you can live. Well, what he said, yes, we're going to do it for health reasons and for population control. I never heard that vaccinations were population control, but they are, because that's the mindset of Europeans. They're not having kids. Their birth rates are diminishing. Europeans have been experiencing negative population growth for the last 30 years. That's why in this country, they used to say that by 2050, the so-called minorities of this country will be the majority. Now they're saying by 2040, which is 22 years from now, that the people who were so-called minorities will be the majority, and Caucasians will be the so-called minority. And that's a fear. That's a fear for them globally. It's just like in Europe. They were paying Caucasian women to have children. In fact, that whole immigration piece in Europe was because their population is so old, they were even willing to bring in Arabs. Because, of course, Arabs ain't Africans, and they're more closer to looking Caucasian than us. But they're willing to bring in Syrians and others into Austria and Germany. Number one, they got to have some people to do the work. Even though they're Muslim, but their thinking might be, well, we might change that. But the bottom line is, what I'm saying is that there are issues for us that we have to take care of. Go ahead, Brother Mickey.
Well, I was just saying that one of the things that in BUF that Brother Kwaku and I have been working on is trying to raise up a cadre of younger sisters and brothers to tackle these international issues, because we're getting up in age.
That's
now,
right.
And
that's
really
right.
Need to develop some young leadership, and so we've been talking to one of the young brothers in our Houston chapter, and hopefully we'll. you know, we can develop some others. But this international piece, and I think Malcolm was very clear on the importance of internationalizing our struggle, because it's the same oppressor pretty much all over the world. And in the time, you know, in the two times that I went to Libya, both of them had to do with some international organizing. I got to meet people from around the diaspora, you know, who had come there with the help of the Libyan government. So I know that sentiment is out there, and we just have to continue to create some young leadership, people that can have that vision, that understand that our hope as a people really lies in a united revolutionary Africa. I mean, I just think that ultimately that's where you know, like you quoted Dr. Clark, that we're not going to be respected until we have a homeland of our own that is powerful and that can defend us no matter where we are in the world. And I just think that has to be the goal, but that takes some organizing.
It does. It takes some serious organizing, and I'm hoping that cadre of leadership emerges on the continent and throughout the diaspora. As I said, my vision, or I look at it like there is a group of brothers and sisters on the continent, and there's a group of brothers and sisters in the diaspora. They come together and they formulate the delegation or the coalition for a free Africa and African people. They go on the continent and confront the neocolonialists. They go on the continent and say, if it's not going to be done right, if it's not going to benefit the people, you got to go. Because the only government that it should be is a government that is, and I agree with you on that representative government, as opposed to a two-party state or three-party state or dissenters. No, the bottom line is that we must find out what is going to be best for the African people. What kind of agricultural process, what kind of communication process, education process, energy, and so forth. All of these things need to be dealt with. Because...
And don't leave out, Brother Oshie, it learning from history, learning from the past mistakes, we have to understand what we're up against. Because if this movement has any success at all, You got to expect that the oppressor is going to try to crush it. So we've got to be cognizant of that, and as we organize, you know, try to understand how do we sustain ourselves against what we know is going to be some serious oppression, because that's what's happened to so many of the, you know, the revolutionary sisters and brothers in Africa. You know, as they begin to develop movements, I mean, they just get snuffed out, and so you know that these folks are not a friend of yours. You know they're going to come after you. You know they're going to try to destroy us. And so we have to prepare for that also.
Because there's no doubt about it. They have shown that they will kill you. They will
Absolutely.
Undermine your organization, and they will kill you. See, I look at... See, let me say this, and I've stated this many times on this program. I don't hate anybody. I hate no one. In fact, I understand and love humanity. But let me tell you what I do hate. I hate Europeans for coming up with a system of giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. In fact, they've done such a damn good job of it that everybody hates us. Nobody wants... In fact, there was a movie... with Omar Epps in it. In fact, it was a true story. Ironically, I was in Ghana. I've been there like four or five times. But anyway, I was in there at that one time, and one of the brothers I was talking with, because there was a fight. There was a boxing match with a Ghanaian fighter who was going to be, I can't remember the brother's name, and he won that night. But anyway, talking about that movie, that he knew some people who, what the movie is I think it's called Stowaway, where some Ghanaian brothers stole you on this Russian ship, and then they're found, and they're hunted like animals. They're shot and killed like animals on this Russian ship that is bound from Ghana to France. And so the only one left was Omar Epps. And what he did, his character, and what he did is put a picture of him and his wife and his child in some coffee, because he knew that it was going to come a point that if he can get out, he was going to tell the French authorities. But it was going to be his word against the Germans. His word against the Russians' word. In fact, when he did get the French police to confront them, the Russian dude said this: "We were doing you a favor by killing them because nobody wants niggers." And that is the mindset. Because of what European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege has done, that was the mindset. And the mindset today of people around this damn world: we have no friends, brothers and sisters. You want a friend? Go look in a mirror. And don't leave that mirror until you like what you see. Not that you like the shape of your nose or your eyebrows or arch. No, you like what you see as an African. You like what you see culturally, historically. And you love what you see because of us. That's what we need to do. We only have a few minutes. Baba Kwaku, give me some closing remarks, please.
Hey, listen, I'm just so happy to be a part of this, and it just sets me off. I was about ready to declare the Pan-African Nation, and I was just about to wait for y'all as emissaries to go to Libya, to go to this and that. But, you know, but that's what I think we have it. I think we just have to think as a nation. If we just start thinking we are already a nation, we used to think that, Black America. We need to get back to that, or you know, back to that again. But I'm just happy. I just want to continue. I want to just keep on trying to organize, and as Brother Mickey said, get the young people in more and more involved. So right on.
Okay. Brother Mickey, go ahead.
Well, you know, I appreciate programs like this, Brother Ocean. We just got to get them, circulated so more of our people can hear this type of message, because, you know, what we are bombarded with today with the media. I mean, it's not a mystery to why our minds, how people's minds are so jacked up, man, and for lack of, you know, good information. And so I appreciate the show. And I appreciate the warrior spirit that you bring to this show, man. You don't hold back, bro, and I appreciate that, man. So, anytime I can help you out, just let me know, man.
Well, listen, Brother Mickey, we're going to get you on here a few more times and other issues. If you guys want to come on, you and Baba, you're more than welcome. You're going to have a home right here. This program is committed and dedicated. We talk about on this program independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. It is the only discussion that we need to have. And so, therefore, we're committed to doing that. We end this program with the words of Stephen Biko: the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time to helping to free the African mind, to get us to think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed us in, to get us to help release the vice grip that they have on our minds. And if you're familiar with that tool, you just can't pull it apart. You have to turn that little knob at the end of the handle. And the turning of that knob is symbolically meaning that you are gaining consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deep understanding of who you are. So, my brothers and sisters, we appreciate this opportunity. Join us again on Wednesday for more African perspectives. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Thank you, my dear brothers and sisters. Have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace. Peace, brothers.